Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the You Should Run podcast. I'm your host, Tony Heil, council member in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, which is nestled in Montgomery County near Philadelphia. And if you've been listening to the podcast over the last year, you've heard me talk with people who are friends of mine in the local area, people who are new in New Jersey and New York and Florida and Ohio, and all the way out to Alaska, who've run for different kinds of offices from Congress to mayor, to judge, to even personatory, which is very exciting. And I am very excited today to have my first person on the podcast who has run statewide, and he is from Iowa. And so this will be a very exciting, interesting podcast discussion. My first political experience comes from Iowa, and yet the person I'm talking with is far more accomplished than me, and even younger, which is a little bit discouraging to me, but hopefully we'll both sound impressive. So I want to welcome you to the state auditor in Iowa who won in 2018. He's got a really interesting and cool story about his accomplishments there, the things he's doing, and what an auditor means. And maybe you're not going to run for state auditor in your area, in your state, but there's local auditors, and there's a lot you can learn as an official at any level of government. So with that introduction, with Iowa being kind of important in the next few weeks, and at all times, I'm sure, welcome Rob Sand.
Thanks for having me, Tony. I appreciate it.
So as we were discussing, my original path in politics started in Iowa. I've been through most parts of the state, but not your part of the state, because you are from where in Iowa?
Northeast Iowa, yeah, Decorah. Almost as far north as you can get and almost as far east.
And even though you're a little bit younger than me, you're not much younger.
37.
So you didn't have to point that out. You could have just... because when you say you're younger than me at 37, sorry, that means...
Sorry.
Reminds people that I'm maybe 40, which is fine. But, you know, when you were growing up and you're watching Ninja Turtles, and which I assume you were, were you dreaming that one day you could either be Michelangelo or a state auditor?
I think it was more like astronaut or wide receiver in the NFL.
So who do you root for?
Either way, state auditor was not on my radar, not until I started my work at the Attorney General's office.
And since you're in Iowa, so like I'm in Pennsylvania, I'm from Pittsburgh, live in the Philly area, so I can root for two different teams in one state. Who do you root for when you watch football?
Honestly, usually whichever team has more Iowa products on it, from either a college in Iowa or Iowa natives. Other than that, you know, NFC North was more of a... I was a Redskins fan when I was growing up, but Vikings fans and Packers fans make up most of the allegiances in my hometown.
Well, that's a very good answer for politics. You're just going to root forever as the most Iowa people, so you'll probably...
Yeah, I'm just much more of a college football fan. I guess I pay a little bit more attention to pros these days because I started playing fantasy. Mm-hmm. Honestly, like, there's something a little more pure about the college game, I think.
I'll take your word for it.
My two cents.
As I get older and I watch college football, I see people get hit. I'm like, oh, that kid's only born during the Clinton impeachment. And that really, that's how I date everything by what was going on politically that time.
It was pretty wild to think about.
But speaking of what you think about politically, Iowa, obviously, a very political state. Not that every state isn't, but, you know, all eyes are on Iowa constantly since campaigning never ends. When did you first get interested in politics? Like, was it something that was discussed at the table when you were a kid?
I was certainly interested in the sense that my parents were civically active. And what I mean by that is, you know, working on the board of a nonprofit and working in helping professions and active in the community. So they were both registered independents. I remember them voting for Democrats and Republicans. And I got first interested in the idea of politics and governance because I was a skateboarder in high school. And I got sick and tired of me and my friends getting kicked out of every single skate spot that we went to, and so I started a petition to get a skate park built in Decorah. It took 2 years. It got built, and by the end of it, I thought, hey, look, I just accomplished something that makes a difference in my community. Cool. This I want to be active.
This is a very 90s kid way of getting into politics.
Yeah, actually, I just watched mid-90s, that movie that Jonah Hill made. Not very relatable from my perspective, but at least, it was about skateboarders in the mid-90s, but that was about it. That was where the similarities ended.
So that probably means that you were very sad when Beto O'Rourke dropped out, because that was your connection, right?
I appreciated the fact that he was a skater and that he was a guitar player, which I am as well. I do think you look at Texas right now, and Democrats are going to win statewide in Texas again someday, and it's going to that day is coming sooner than it would have otherwise if he had not done what he did in 2018 in the Senate race.
And I mean, the thing I like most about Beto, more than any policy position, more than anything he's done as a person in politics, is that when he dropped out, and I think he had some good positions running, I don't have a judgment either way, but is that he has devoted his time to electing more Democrats in Texas and really putting a lot of effort into that.
That's a good thing to be doing.
Yeah, and they can flip the state house in Texas. It's really not unreasonable.
That's great. I hadn't been following it that closely.
Well, you've been following some other things, I'm sure, in Iowa, because you are the state auditor. Now, you obviously had not envisioned running for this kind of office until recently, right?
Correct.
Yeah. But you had some really cool government experience. So you had that experience as a young person, and I really want to learn more about what you're doing professionally. We do have a Rhode Island connection, right?
Yeah, I went to Brown for undergrad. What's your tie in there?
Well, my wife, who's in the other room, is from Providence, so
cool.
I'm a fan of Rhode Island.
All right, me too. Yeah, little roadie.
My sister-in-law, who's married into the family, her nickname for my brother-in-law is Roadie, so
it's a good, okay. There you go. Yeah, good spot.
So when you went to Brown and then you came back to Iowa during your college time, which was in the early 2000s, right?
Yeah, I graduated in 2005.
So were you getting really politically engaged and thinking about Iowa during that time?
No, not really. My interest has always been a little bit tighter on the policy side and on the governance side. When I was working on the skate park project, I really was working with civil servants, the guy who is a full-time employee at the Park and Rec Department in Decorah, Rick Edwards. It was political work in the sense that it was through channels of government, but it was really more of a policy issue and trying to get the wheels of government working. It wasn't oriented towards a campaign or electing anyone. So when I was in college, I was much more interested in campaign finance reform and being active in that. I actually did my senior thesis, my honors thesis on the effects of public campaign financing on political participation. And I did register as a Democrat when I was in college, because I figured out very quickly. I stayed registered at my parents' address, as you're allowed to do. I figured out pretty quickly that if you want to have double the impact by voting in a primary, that in Iowa, you have to be registered for one party or the other. So I registered as a Democrat. I did volunteer a little bit. There was a guy who was running for Congress in my hometown. So when I was home one summer, I did volunteer on his campaign. I think that was the summer before my senior year, roughly.
So that'd be 2004, probably?
A little bit, but... What's that?
So that'd be 2004?
Yeah, I think so, around that time frame.
And for people like you and me in 2004, and that time, because I was in Iowa in early 2004, in 2003, that was a big time for politics for young people, with the Iraq War and really getting a lot of young people very engaged.
Yeah, good point. I did go to some, prior to the invasion of Iraq, I did go to some protests, protesting the idea that we were going to go fight in a dumb war against a country that had no connection to 9/11 to find non-existent weapons of mass destruction.
And who would have thought that all these years later we'd have a Republican president calling it a dumb war? Yes. We'll leave it at that. But you went on to work for the Attorney General's office. Is that something that was a personal goal because you had seen government work and wanted to do that kind of stuff on the inside?
You know, I wanted to do public service work. Right. So I went to Iowa for law school in part because I had a full scholarship. I turned down Harvard Law because I figured it was going to be really hard for me to take a job in public interest law if I was only making a little bit of money, if I was carrying the kind of debt that you get with that kind of a legal education. So I went to Iowa. I was interested in working for legal aid. They weren't hiring. And then I got an offer at the AG's office, and amazingly, specifically to prosecute mostly financial crime, which I was actually really excited about. So that is where I ended up, and that is what first got me exposed to the state auditor's office in Iowa. They do all of the public corruption investigations in Iowa, mm-hmm. and I did more of the public corruption prosecution in Iowa over that decade than anyone else in the state. So I worked with some folks over there and got a bit of a window into the office.
And so I imagine you were pretty young working on big corruption cases then, right?
Yeah, I was. I had some large-scale tax credit fraud cases, large-scale embezzlement cases, more than a couple that cracked $1 million, many that were in the hundreds of thousands. But I had a boss there who was a Republican, mind you. Well, granted, both of my immediate supervisors were Republicans, but he really believed in me and trusted me and was really a mentor to me there, and you know, said, "You're ready to do this stuff, you can do it," and gave me cases and let me take care of them, and I did.
And I bring up your age not to make you feel good or boast about you, but you look at organizations like Run for Something, like Emerge, and a few other organizations out there that are trying to get a lot of younger people to run for office. I think one thing that holds back people of all ages, but especially sometimes younger people, is the worry that they won't have the confidence to do the job well. And
sure.
That they'll go into a room. And I mean, I felt this and I when I got into office, too, just like, well, I'm the young one here. I'm new. I don't know if people are going to take me seriously. But your experience is they're only going to take you seriously if you're at the table.
Precisely. I mean, I had judges call me Doogie Howser. I had judges asking me how old I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I had defense attorneys that underestimated me. And yeah, I mean, you only get to, if people are either going to take you seriously or not, and if it's based on your age, what you are doing is not going to change that, so you might as well go for it and do whatever you want. You can't control people's reactions to what you're doing. All you can do is, you know, do what you want to do and go for it and do well at it, do your best. And, you know, someone thinks you're too young for it, or you don't have enough experience, or, you know, you're overconfident because you're doing things that, you know, maybe they didn't feel comfortable doing it when they were your age. You can't control their reaction. Just go do your thing and let them worry about what they think about it.
Yeah, and I think it's so important that we encourage people who feel like they're going to be intimidated to get involved, because they may feel underrepresented, but that group, whatever it is, young people, women, minorities, won't be more represented until you actually do it.
And I tend to find, too, I mean, you know, everyone in this planet is making it up as they go along.
Yes.
There is no one who steps into anything in the world, whether it's a new job or parenthood, who knows how this is going to work and knows what to do. So one of the best antidotes to thinking that you're underqualified is getting to know some of the people that are doing it and realizing, if they can do this, I can do this.
Mm-hmm. And so, speaking of which, in that office, you got to meet a lot of government people. I imagine you met people who were elected in elected office, and did that kind of get you into their mindset of, you know, I can do this and encourage you to run for auditor then?
No. In fact, my experience was very tightly tied to criminal prosecution. I didn't work with the legislature at all. I was really just focused on the day in, day out work of litigating and handling criminal cases. What made me interested was just seeing that, as much as I liked the people that I worked with in the auditor's office, there was a lot of work there that they should have or could have done differently. Mm-hmm. So to be very specific, the office had no one in it that was, it had a law enforcement background. And there were numerous occasions where I saw that an investigation should have been done differently, and it would have been if they'd had people working on it from day one with a law enforcement background. And that was the first thing that kind of got me a little bit interested in the idea, like, oh, well, you know, maybe I could, someday I could fix that. And then when I was about 6 years in, I just had this moment where I realized, I was describing myself to somebody, and I said the same thing I've kind of always said in my life, because I'm a pretty steady person. I've described myself, I said, I'm a happy, optimistic person. But for the first time in my life, it sounded, I imagine it sounded like this. I'm a happy, optimistic person. And I realized as the words came out of my mouth that it just wasn't as true as it used to be. Wasn't lying, because I didn't realize it was going to sound that way to myself. But it really was kind of a wake-up call to me and made me realize that I didn't want to be doing what I was doing the rest of my life. Criminal prosecution work is not, there's no winning in criminal law. I mean, you can get the right outcome, but every bit of it, everything you do every day is just rooted in darkness and rooted in sin. And frankly, even when you get what you want, let's say I get somebody sent to prison for embezzling $250,000, well, they have an 11-year-old, a 13-year-old at their house. It still sucks. There's still a lot of downside there. So I just thought, you know, I want to do something where I can have more of a positive impact. And I started thinking about the fact that I knew that the auditor's office, I thought from my perspective, working with their staff, that they could do things differently. And so I started looking into it more. And to do that, I read the code. So I literally sat down and read Chapter 11 of the Iowa Code, which is titled State Auditor. And it's all about the work that the auditor of state does in Iowa. So when I read it, I found out that the office actually has an incredibly broad authority to make good recommendations, useful recommendations for how to improve government in Iowa. And that actually got me really excited because, like I said, you know, I worked on improving political participation and campaign finance and in undergrad. I'm a bit of a good government nerd, and so I really like the idea of getting people more involved in helping them see the government, that our government, the way we choose to govern ourselves, can be done well. And the idea that here's an office with a broad charge to do something that no one is opposed to, right? Making government work more efficiently. Mm-hmm. And yet it wasn't doing it. And so to me, it was like, wow, all I have to do is basically run for state auditor and then use the powers that already exist in that office to make government operate more efficiently and effectively in Iowa. I don't need to pass a law. I don't need to convince the legislature to go along with me. I just need to run and then set the program up if I win. And that was it. And that got me really excited because I, you know, wake up every day and get excited about finding new ways to make government work better and spreading those ideas around the state.
And, you know, that is cool that you can have a position in government where you can make a direct impact. Like you said, if you're a legislator, and there's a lot of people in who run for office who are like, I can only do executive work, like be a governor or mayor. Right. Being a legislator is just too frustrating to me, or vice versa. But, you know, when you're a legislator, like you said, you're trying to pass a law and it gets watered down and someone needs to do this or the committee won't vote for it. But If you're an auditor, and not just a state auditor, but the local municipalities sometimes elect auditors too, or counties and whatnot, it's a type of job where you can make a direct impact and in a lot of ways that you wouldn't expect, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. We get to work with city officials, work with county officials, and work with state officials to just make government operate more efficiently and more effectively. So we put together a whole new program that spreads those recommendations, collects those recommendations, and then spreads them all over the state. And I'm really excited about just getting it kicked off, which is one of the things we're doing this month.
So, but like you said, all I needed to do was run for state auditor. And I didn't know much about what an auditor did even until we had this conversation. And I don't know if an auditor has the same power in every state even. But I do know that running for office, especially state office, is not something you just do on a whim. Were you prepared for the challenges of running statewide, especially with two young kids? Because women are always, moms are always asked, were you prepared at being a mom? But you're a dad with two young kids, and this is a lot of work.
And you raise a good point. I mean, the job auditor, I think, is only elected in 16 states. In a lot of different states, you know, you might have a comptroller, you might have a treasurer, so it varies state by state for this specific job. But campaign-wise, I think I was pretty prepared. I had worked on a statewide down ballot, meaning not U.S. Senate, not governor. I had worked on a statewide down ballot race in 2006, in between undergrad and law school. So I had seen the reality of what those races are like. I did major in political science, which I think is helpful in understanding how the mechanics of campaigns work. And I think by the time I was running, you know, I had, by that point, gotten a pretty good understanding of what I would need to do in order to prevail, in Iowa in a statewide down ballot race. So I knew what I needed to do family-wise. You know, here's the flip side of this for me. Well, on the one hand, campaigning is difficult. On the other hand, the job I had had me trying major felony trials all around the state of Iowa, on average 6 times a year. And those cases, on average, were a 4-day trial. So if I had a 4-day trial 6 times a year, you know, that's 6 weeks of the year where I'm gone. I mean, campaigning, you're out on the road a lot, but not that much.
Right.
And you can control when you do it. So you can make a lot of your stops during the day, come back, be your own home at night. And then a lot of the rest of the time, you know, you're sitting in that room dialing for dollars, which I knew I needed to do. And I'd done a little bit of that before. And so I kind of thought, hey, look, I think I can do this. I quit my job, so I was just campaigning for a year, which very fortunate that I was able to do that. My wife out-earns me, so that obviously helps.
Yes, that's always good. Can you get my wife to out-earn me, too?
Yeah. But the other piece of that, too, was, you know, I was like, look, if I win, I'm going to get a raise, and that raise makes this job essentially over 4 years, the length of the term, be financially a wash. So I can quit my job and not have a paid job for a year. And then by doing that, by making that upfront investment, that could pay off in a job with a higher wage in the end. So financially, you know, it was a pinch to begin, but then worked out in the end.
So one thing, though, when you're running for an office like auditor, is getting people to care. I mean, I understand your position.
Amen.
And so you're, especially in a year like 2018, when people are talking about all sorts of issues, and I'm sure in Iowa, with people starting to run for president, too, people are talking about, like, if you're running for, you know, dog catcher in Iowa, they're asking you about immigration or asking you about healthcare reform, right? So. What was your strategy to get people to pay attention to your role?
You know, as you can tell just from listening to me right now, I had a lot of fairly personal reasons for deciding to run. And I think when you let people see who you are as a person and help them understand the decision to run for an office like state auditor, even if the job itself isn't super interesting to them, they're listening to you talk about it and they're saying, oh, this is interesting that this person is so interested in it. And I think I would regularly have people say, you know, your excitement about the job is actually infectious. The fact that you're excited makes me excited, that sort of thing. So, you know, telling people about it and getting and being very dry and clinical about it is one thing, but to really tell them, like, about the point that I was at in my life where I wasn't particularly happy because everything that I was doing was fundamentally dark and depressing, really helped them actually get an idea not just of what the office does, but why someone might want to hold it and what it could do for them as taxpayers entirely.
You know, listening to you, it kind of gives me hope that you say that your other job was dark and depressing, because you see so many people who are district attorneys or attorneys general, getting it right, or work in government, who would see that role and their view of it, not just as Republicans, but many Democrats too, maybe more, most Democrats, would look at it differently. So I think when you listen to your perspective on it, it's not just about electing a Democrat or Republican. It's about the person behind that and how they view justice and how they view outcomes. Because
precisely.
You don't hear a lot of people talk about the criminal justice system in the way you did.
No, you don't. You know, I had this preconception of it from, you know, TV and movies and books that I would be this crusading prosecutor out there, you know, righting wrongs and going after powerful insiders and people in positions of trust that abuse their trust. And I got to do all those things. But then at the end of the day, you know, the outcome, while it's justice in one sense, still isn't something that you really get to truly be happy about, because it's still rooted in this terrible wrong that they did to someone else or to their community.
Right.
And that's the piece of it that I never really thought about until I was deep into it, doing it day to day.
So you've been auditor now for a year, about. And you've been able to do things. What makes you happy and hopeful as well, whether it's as an auditor or seeing what's going on in Iowa, which of course is humming with political activity?
Yeah. I'm really excited about our PIE program. That's Public Innovations and Efficiencies. It's actually the program that we are using to do precisely what I was describing. I just think it's going to do a lot of good for the state in terms of making people more excited about lifting up the good that happens in governance and making things operate more effectively. I'm excited to see lots of young staffers here in Iowa working for the candidate of their choice, but for the most part agreeing that we have a lot of work to do after we have a nominee as well. And it's fun to see them here and the passion that they're bringing to the state. It's fun to get to know some of them and hear their stories too. And you know, just generally speaking, in my own life, I was building a Lego kit with my 5-year-old tonight. It's good to disconnect from politics and sort of reconnect to things that bring us all together. You know, family. Another one for me is getting outside, having an opportunity to get into the outdoors and enjoy something out there like that too.
Now, is your 5-year-old political? Because mine is.
No. He's heard that me and his mom are not fans of President Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't know why. And he, because I was asking about that the other day, and I didn't start to explain it to him.
Maybe you're better at this than I am, because I listen to NPR in the car a lot, and they were talking about impeachment, and my son Andrew said, did they impeach the president? And I said, no, they're going too soon. And he said, yay! So,
you know what? Maybe I'm worse at it. Who knows? I'm a big believer that You know, you want to raise your kids to think for themselves, but you certainly want to raise them to be thinking about politics and be thinking about policy. And frankly, to be understanding that being a citizen of a republic requires that they execute on their duties. It's not just rights. It's not just privileges, but there are duties, things we have to do as citizens in order to keep our republic. And, you know, you can start those things at age 5 or earlier, or you can start them later. I just tend to think right now, at least, or at least the other night, when maybe I only had 5 minutes, that it wasn't a conversation for the other night.
But, you know, to your point, it does, I feel like with your role in particular, because it's a role of good governance, you want to set out an example for your children, which I want to do too, and for your constituency, and for others looking at what the Democratic Party can be, because you want it to be them looking at and seeing this is what government should be, right? Like, do you think of yourself as an example?
I agree with that, but here's my response to that. Fundamentally, and I talk about this all the time on the campaign trail, I talked about this even when I was talking to groups of Democrats only. Politics has got to be about policy and has got to be about serving the public rather than your party. And a lot of that comes down to really very fundamental, universally agreed upon values. I talk to my kids every day about being a good person, about being kind, about helping others, about being brave or courageous, about doing the right thing, about not wasting, all kinds of values that I'm teaching them. And I want them always to put those values first, because as soon as you allow a political party or a political persuasion to dictate your values to you, then you have no values, you have only a party. And I think we're seeing way too much of that in our country right now. And so I'm in many ways focusing on teaching them all kinds of stuff, but I want their politics ultimately to be informed by what it is that they've been taught to value, rather than having what they value being informed by their political persuasion.
Yeah, and hopefully you can help, because everyone that is an elected official is defining what politics is at that moment, defining their party. You know, the Republican Party was the party of Bush, now it's the party of Trump, which is very different in a lot of ways. The Democratic Party was the party of Clinton, then it was the party of Obama. And not that the Democratic Party in Iowa is the party of Rob Sand, but people will look... But, I mean, where I am in Bridgeport, it's become the Democratic Party, or the government of Bridgeport is Tony Hile in a way. And so they will look to you and say, okay, I can trust that. And hopefully that means either they trust to elect other Democrats, or just they trust government more. And that could be a good thing for getting things done. Like, it's not just about winning or losing, but hopefully that's a good thing.
No, I agree with that. I say a lot of times, you know, electing... I'm the first Democratic auditor in 50 years. And for a very, very, very long time, I think the office wasn't heavily contested because you had two parties where the power structure of the party, right? I am not talking right now about ordinary rank-and-file Democrats or Republicans or citizens.
Right.
But for a very long time, we had two parties where the power structure of the party and either party believed in the idea of good government. And the power structure of the Republican Party now is best epitomized, I think, by the idea that they don't believe in government and that they don't want government to do anything, or they want it to do far less than what most ordinary citizens want. And so I've said, and I'll say it again many times, putting someone who's a part of the modern Republican power structure in charge of an office that's supposed to promote good government is like putting a vegan in charge of the kitchen at your steakhouse.
Right.
I mean, you're going to get someone who, on the one hand, they know what their job is. Okay, I'm supposed to make this steak taste delicious. But if I do that, then people might want to eat more meat, and I don't want them to eat more meat. So maybe they're going to try to make it taste terrible.
Mm-hmm.
There's a moral hazard there. And so to me, you know, I think that if if Democrats are the party that want people to understand that at the end of the day, government is us, and government is capable of doing things as good or as bad as the people who make it up, then I think we do want to be focused on making government operate better to help rebuild trust. And I think trust is good for everybody.
Yeah, and I see on Twitter, and I know you're active on Twitter, according to Election Twitter, hashtag, you're the one of the more popular people on there.
Yay.
But in a good way. There are a lot of people who feel vindictive and they want the Democratic Party to be just as ruthless. But on the other hand, then what do we become if that's the case?
Yeah, it's a tough question. And we are going to be feeling that one out and trying to answer that, not just in 2020, but in 2022 and beyond.
Yeah.
You see acts of historic obstruction, like what Republicans did with Merrick Garland. I mean, we have questions that need to be answered, and I know for certain that we need to be talking about why these questions are important. They aren't a thing that are they aren't something that's going to show up in polling, because you know polls are always going to tell you that people care the most about the things that they literally encounter in their everyday life the most, right? People encounter jobs, people encounter education, people encounter healthcare. And so if you ask them, well, yeah, those are all important. But if we actually lead on things and start talking about what it means to be loyal opposition and what it means to have a country where two parties are committed to the idea of governing together and governing, right? Actually attempting to solve problems instead of ensuring that they fester in order to further tear down trust and further convince people the government cannot work. If we teach people about the importance of trust and having two parties that are interested in governing, then point out that the power structure of one party right now isn't, you know, maybe we start leading on that kind of thing, we can actually have an impact.
Right. So the podcast is called You Should Run. You make a lot of good points about why you ran, what motivated you, and how you're able to make a difference in a race like state auditor. Why should more people run for office, and including for races like yours? People can't all run for state auditor. There's only 16 of them, you said. But but there are positions like that, whether it's local treasurer or auditor or whatnot. Why should we get more people to run for office in 2020?
So we want to have more people to run for office. We should always have a choice mm-hmm. in every election. But I'm a believer that it's important to run for something where your story about why you're running for that office can resonate with people and they can understand why it is that you're attracted to that office and why you want to hold it. If you want to run for something good, do. But don't be afraid if in 2020 nothing is speaking to you. To wait till 2022 or 2024 and wait for that right time to come along. If you can do that and understand that you won't discourage yourself, then maybe you end up running at a time where, or at a time or and or for an office that puts you in the right position to win. Because I think people are looking for people to run who really know what they want to do and know why they want to do it. And I think that matters to a ton of people, and that's easier to articulate when you're running for something that you're passionate about.
Right. Well, I hope that people are channeling their passion to doing good things. I appreciate what you're doing in Iowa. I'm hopeful to get my state auditor for Pennsylvania, Eugene DePasquale, hopefully be a guest in here soon.
He's a good guy. I'll shoot him a text right now and tell him to get on.
Oh, good. Well, I have been in touch with his staff, so he is a good guy. I appreciate it. It's a cool thing you get to be part of the National Auditor Network. That's probably a highlight.
It is fun. Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, Tony. I appreciate it.
Thanks. And if you're listening, please follow the podcast, of course. You Should Run. Follow us on iTunes and subscribe. And follow Rob Sand, the state auditor of Iowa, at RobSandIA. Thank you so much, Rob. I really appreciate you giving me your time, and good luck to your family.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tony. Thank you too.